I read a review that tried to take that angle, and then it's like, they're all right.
It's not as bad as the internet says, but it's still bad.
No, it was, okay. It's worse than the internet Yikes. Says. What's up? This is Movies on Up. Be a warrior. I'm Dave, joined by my warrior of a co-host, Mr. Ryan.
That is the only way I'll ever be called a warrior.
And we are Movies on Up.
We still are.
Yes. Tagline for this week, be a warrior. If you know what movie that's from, hit us up, moviesonup@gmail.com, facebook.com/moviesonup, or Twitter @moviesonup. If you're right, and we will pick you, we will bend space and time and send you a Movies on Up prize package. Although I think that's what the mail people do.
I think that's how the mail is delivered nowadays.
It is.
Tessering.
It is the middle of the year. So it is time for one of my favorite episodes of the year is our halftime show. I think we've done this every
Probably.
Year. Maybe not that first year. Or maybe we did. I don't know. I'm not looking it up.
If only there was a way.
Yeah, but just a look back on this year. This year is fascinating to me. I could be wrong. I feel like the quality of movies, especially in the first half of the year, is gotten so good compared to where we were even when this podcast started.
Yes, I agree.
It's not just...
Last year, I had a wire-to-wire winner. Never happened before.
It's not just that I'm seeing more movies.
Not going to happen this year.
I've always watched a lot of movies, but like I remember one year, I had to put Sponge Out of Water 5th because
and did you even finish watching that?
Yeah, because we saw it in the theater.
Okay,
but I had to put it 5th just that. Because there weren't any other movies
there
I enjoyed that
there was not a better
year.
Movie
yeah.
It's Sponge
like
Ball.
The first few halftime shows I feel like it's okay, I have 3 and now can I squeeze out 4 and 5. A couple years ago, okay, now there's 7 or 8. This year, I have 13.
Not to let the cat out of the bag, but I think Netflix has helped to that.
Netflix has helped a ton, but I have 13, and that's not even all my... I have a Google Keep thing, right. Or a iPhone Note, whatever you want to call it. I use the Google Keep, even though, whatever.
But, whoa.
Yeah. If I see a movie and
I have to beep that out.
If I enjoy the movie, I'll immediately write it down so that I don't forget it.
Right.
That's a joy. That's not like, oh, this is going to be on my end of the year list.
I just rank them. Like, as I see it, I slot
it
in.
I don't
in.
Do that. I just list them all. So they're kind of chronological. And then when it comes to a list like the like here, I went through and it's like, okay, is that a contender for top 5? And I got it down to 13. I probably left probably about 7 movies. So I probably have about 20 movies at this point in the year. And to do the top 5, this year I did a little something different. Is we've had Avengers, we've had Black Panther. I can't sit here and say those aren't 2 of my favorite movies of the year so far.
I will say that one of them is.
But
I got your back.
We talk so much about Marvel. I figured you would bring up at least one. I figured those will be contenders at the end of the year. I like them both a lot. So I feel like those might be contenders for my end of the year list. So I kind of wanted to do movies that may not be there at the end of the year. So maybe movies that this is my chance to talk about them and I might not get another chance the rest of the year.
I could see that.
Yeah, so I mean, I have 13, so I'll throw out my also-rans at the end, but my 5, I really like. It's not that these are the lesser of those 13 movies. I still really, really like these movies, and I would think at least a couple of them, 2 or 3 probably, maybe 4 or 5, I don't know, will make my end of the year list. But Ryan, your number 5 favorite movie of the year of our Lord 18 so far.
This was the hardest spot to come up with on my list, because we do a top 5. It was pretty easy for me to fill out my 1 through 4. Then it's like, all right, well, I got space left for one movie, so what's it going to be? And there were so many movies that I wanted to squeeze on here, but kind of like what you said, a lot of those movies you don't need to hear about. A lot of them had big-name directors, maybe like a Steven Spielberg, or were big Disney franchises. And I don't think there's anybody out there listening to this show that needs me to tell them that Black Panther was good. But a movie like Greg Berlanti's Love, Simon maybe is a different story. Starring Nick Robinson, Katherine Langford, Alexandra Shipp, and Logan Miller. I like a good high school movie as much as the next guy. But I found myself particularly drawn into Robinson's Simon, struggling with his sexuality right along with an anonymous student at his high school. Nick Robinson plays Simon completely straight, if you'll pardon the pun, it's perhaps the most average performance that I can remember in a movie, but that's exactly what he was supposed to do. His friends and family are supposed to be surprised when they find out that he is gay, so he can't really be too obvious. And for viewers that aren't gay, you can't alienate them. Because if this is a story just about a kid that's gay, if you're not into it, you can't relate. But he was able to be relatable because the movie was a little bit bigger than that. It was just about trying to find out how he fits in the larger world. So he kind of had to straddle this line of playing the character true to a kid trying to figure out his sexuality and maybe the larger narrative there too. And I thought he did that wonderfully. And there's a couple guys that show up as sort of bit parts. Tony Hale plays the vice principal. He's really, really funny. And Logan Miller's sort of the de facto villain. They both interject quite a few laughs and cringes. No high school movie would be good without a couple cringe moments. That's, you know, a story about, yeah, this kid's gay and he's trying to come to terms with that. But it's also about whoever it is you are trying to just own that and how you put that out in the world.
Yeah, I haven't seen this yet, and I kind of regret it. It was in one of my... I've brought the double feature back this year. I've been seeing two movies a lot. It was one of those that was almost... I almost saw, but I just didn't, and I missed. By the time I got another chance, it was gone. It looked good, and I feel like we're not seeing a lot of the high school movies in wide release anymore, but when we do, they're kind of understatedly, like, really good. Like, Haley Steinfeld 17 yeah. Again, or not 17 again.
No.
Edge of 17.
Yeah.
That was really, really good yeah. And really charming. And Easy A going back a few years, that was really
spectacular now. I mean,
there's
yeah.
the ones that we're getting are really, really good. My number five leads to a point, because I feel like Netflix is almost helping keep those high school comedies alive, because a lot of the ones that would generally get wide release, now those kind of movies are going to Netflix and they're kind of keeping them alive. Big year for Netflix. My number five is a Netflix original movie, and it's not the only one in my top five. It's actually not the first movie I watched this year, but it's the first one on my list, from director David Wayne, who I love, starring Will Forte, Martin Mull, Domhnall Gleeson, Chevy Chase, Stupid and Futile Gesture. This one was hard to leave off our true story one, because I didn't want to do biopics, and this is more about the National Lampoon and the history of it, but it was told through a Doug Kenny biopic. So I left it off because it is a Doug Kenny movie from beginning to end. Will Forte is really, really good in it. Joel McHale's actually really good as Chevy Chase.
He's had some experience.
Yeah, but Will Forte's good because he's such a heartbreaking character. And then you have Domhnall Gleeson, who's just great in everything, even Peter Rabbit this year, which was nuts. It's just really well done. And David Wayne, I feel, is so underrated. I feel like he is one of the best comedic directors, not just working now, but like in a long time. I feel like he just knows how to make it work. And it's not a straight comedy. It's basically a drama about really funny people. And he plays that tone really, really well. Is that, yeah, they do stupid stuff, but there's some pain there, and it's done really, really well. And he does the Martin Mull breaking the fourth wall and talking to the audience. Like, it's done well without ever getting gimmicky. If you fall back to tricks like that too often, it comes off as gimmicky, and I don't feel like this did that. I just thought it was really, really well done. To tell the story of National Lampoon, you have to kind of walk that line between slapstick comedy and heartbreaking tragedy, and this does it very, very well, and it's a damn entertaining watch.
My number four, it's going to become probably a theme at some point in the podcast, so I might as well start it now. It was a pretty decent year for horror movies. We got a good one just about right out of the chute with John Krasinski's A Quiet Place, starring the Krasinskis, John and Emily, and Millicent Simmons. Turns out the guy's a hell of a filmmaker. I saw this one several months after it came out on a Saturday afternoon all by myself. And waiting that long and reading about how good this movie was is usually a difficult hill to climb for any movie. Maybe it's hipster tendencies that I have that start to take over, and I get skeptical of just how much a movie has earned the praise that it's getting. A Quiet Place earned what it got, I would say it earned those accolades. What could have been a gimmicky creature movie turned into one of my favorite movie experiences in recent memory. A part of that was because I waited so long to see it. I was literally the only one in the auditorium. There wasn't any ambient noise. Nobody was crunching on popcorn or squeaking straws or anything like that. So when the movie wanted silence, that's what I got. A Quiet Place is a sensory experience, and I was able to have that. The sequel, I understand they have to do one. Made too much money to not make a sequel. And it may not live up to the original, but I'm now interested in any movie that Krasinski directs, and it just took one to get there. As an actor, I have no particular thoughts about him one way or the other, but he, along with his co-writers, gave me a really unique story and a presentation that does have me hyped for whatever story he wants to tell.
Yeah, it was very atmospheric, and I'm actually going to switch it up a little bit. This was on my top five, but I'm going to knock it off, so give me an opportunity to talk about something else, because I had it up a little higher. It's very, not fun, but it's an atmospheric movie. To nail that is impressive, especially for a, was it? Yeah, it's first-time director. Mm-hmm. Because it did rely on the atmosphere and the world building, essentially. Like, you had to build that world. And a sequel, that's where I felt like Cloverfield could have done, where, okay, you introduce this world, now you just have all these, they're going somewhere completely different, but, like, you introduce this world, like Monsters did that, yeah. Where, okay, here's a separate story in that same world. The Dead are really good zombie movies. The Dead and The Dead 2 are two completely different stories that just take place in the same world. That's what you can do with Quiet Place. Emily Blunt was really, really good in this. I liked the using a real deaf actress. I didn't know that going in. The sound cutting out completely for her, I thought was used really, really well. I don't know that there will be a sound mixing nom for it when it comes up, but I wouldn't be opposed to it, because for a movie that relies so much on sound. And then when you get to it, the creatures were really, really cool.
That was a cool design.
The creatures aren't there enough for you to get tired of them, and you get glimpses of them, but by the time they're there, they're worth it. And the bathtub scene, and, like, there's some really cool stuff in this movie.
And the bathtub scene, it's, for me, it's the cornfield scene. You've got the creatures that can't see, and you've got the girl that can't hear.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot going on. It is a good year for horror.
Yeah.
I'm sure we'll talk about a couple others.
Yes, we will.
Also, a good year for Netflix. My number four, just jumping in at the last minute. It was almost my number five until I replaced it.
It got promoted.
Yeah. Something that normally wouldn't be on my radar. It is probably it's the most recent Netflix movie on my list. It is Set It Up, directed by Claire Scanlon, written by Katie Silberman, starring Zoe Deutsch, who I wish was in every movie ever, Glenn Powell, Lucy Liu, Taye Diggs. Pete Davidson's really good in a supporting
role.
And Titus Burgess is really good as Creepy Tim. It's a romantic comedy. And we talked about in one of our episodes, maybe the Sandy Bullock episode, how they're not really a thing anymore.
The 90s romantic comedies, really. This is a 90s romantic comedy.
Netflix, I mentioned they're keeping high school comedies alive. I feel like they're keeping traditional, like, 90s romantic comedies alive. And this is one. And you know what? I'm not a rom-com guy. This was one of the funnest movie watching experiences I've had this year. It's so full of charm, and the jokes are really, really good. Zoe Deutsch and Glenn Powell are just two assistants to Lucy Liu and Taye Diggs, who don't really have a life, so the setup is simple. Let's get them to hook up so that they have less time for work, and then we get some freedom. And have you watched it yet?
Yeah.
Is it not charming? Is it not just...
It sets out to make a 90s romantic comedy. And it succeeds.
Yeah.
She's really good.
She's ridiculous.
Leah Thompson's daughter?
Is that who that is? I love her in everything she's in.
I think so.
Honestly, I want her to be one of the biggest movie stars out there. I think she is great in she was in that Why Him with Franco. Like, she is just, she reminds me of, like, a younger Anna Kendrick.
That's kind of what I was thinking.
Like, she has this charm and this likability.
Girl Next Door.
This quirkiness that I just...
Yeah, she's the bastard love child of Anna Kendrick and Rachel Lee Cook. Like, that's Zoe Deutsch. Playing a role that you could see Rachel Lee Cook doing in 1997, 1998. That's what this movie felt like. If you had told me that it was filmed then and they lost it and just now found it and put it on, I would buy that.
Yeah.
Because it fits.
It's,
I mean,
it's right in the. Yeah. And I mean, it's written by Katie Silberman, who I feel like was a fan of those movies. And another Netflix movie this year that was one of my also rans was Ibiza, starring Gillian Jacobs and Vanessa Bayer. It's another one of those that wouldn't really be on my radar, but it's a lot of fun. It's another written by a woman. Just, hey, let's put these women in a situation that's generally a rom-com, but it's just really, really fun. And Netflix is, they're not just spurting out content. They're not just creating content for the sake of creating content. Like, they know what they're trying to do, and I feel like they're delivering it on most of it. And I think Set It Off, if you're looking for a romantic comedy that makes you feel like you're watching When Harry Met Sally or anything like that, this is it. Or Sleepless in Seattle, probably. Not When Harry Met Sally.
Accurate. My number three is a Netflix movie, too. Not a romantic comedy. But there's been a couple movies that Netflix has done where they've taken a guy that you wouldn't necessarily think leading a horror movie, and he's led the hell out of good horror movies. I went with Cargo, directed by Ben Howling and Yolanda Romke, starring a guy you wouldn't think of. You might think of him in rom-coms, Martin Freeman. He's fantastic in this, along with Anthony Hayes and Simone Landers. The other one that kind of comes to mind is Rafe Spall in The Ritual, which was a decent genre movie this year.
Good creature flick.
Yeah. It's not saving in my top 15, but that's a guy that you don't think of Rafe Spall in that genre, but he did well. Martin Freeman leading a zombie movie, I think, is probably even more surprising than Rafe Spall showing up in The Ritual. But calling Cargo a zombie movie is accurate, but I think it's misleading. It's a great story about a man and his kid just trying to survive what may be the first throes of an apocalyptic event in Australia. It reminds me quite a bit of movies like The Road or Maggie, for reasons that will become obvious if you've seen Cargo. I started thinking about when zombie movies, or specifically like when The Walking Dead was good, they made you care about the human characters and really fear for their safety, not only from the dead, but from the survivors as well. In Cargo, you know, there's not huge battles with lions and tigers and automatic weapons. It's a smaller story about a family just trying to do the best for each other, and it's about loss, and all of that just happens to take place on an island full of zombies.
This was my four, and then I bumped it up to three for Quiet Place. I'm not going to remove it. I could sneak in another movie to talk about, but this is it's one of my favorite movies I've seen this year. Ritual was good. It made my list of movies I liked this year, but it didn't make the list of movies that could be top five. Cargo, as soon as I watched it, I thought, that's going to be hard to top this year. Like, it's a really, really...
I started telling people, I was like, stop what you're doing.
It's based on a short film from years ago. And the short film, I remember watching it when it came out. It's one of the best, most impactful short films I've ever seen. It's only 5 minutes, but it's phenomenal. And it's so good. And I was worried, how do you make that short film into a feature length? And they did. And, you know, with the lesser actor, it doesn't work as well. Somebody like Martin Freeman, who's not necessarily known for horror, because he's not a survivor girl. He's not your, you know, I'm going to slay a bunch of zombies. It's not that. He's a dad that's protecting his baby. And that's what it is. And the gut-wrench moment, the stuff you know is going to happen.
There's
still
a couple
hurts,
that happen very early.
Still hurts when it happens. Yeah. Like, you know what's going to happen, and it still hurts when it does. And it builds up, and it leads to an ending that I feel is just one of the... It's a beautiful ending.
It is.
Like, it's a beautiful, sad, heartbreaking, but right ending. It's such a good movie. And it's not a good zombie movie. It's not a good Netflix movie. It's a really good movie. And it's one of the best movies I have seen this year.
I was hyped for it. It's a good family movie.
I mean, it's one of those I watched the day it came out because I was so... I loved the short film that much that I was amped for it. And
I just stumbled on it.
It's good.
I was like, holy shit, this
Go back
is
and watch
great.
The short film. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I got 5 minutes for that. I had mentioned that it was a good year for horror. I've got three horror movies in my top five. And this, I guess, would be the most recent. It is Ari Aster's Hereditary, starring Toni Collette, Millie Shapiro, and Gabriel Byrne. I understand the backlash about this movie. Like many of the A24 horror movies, you're either going to love them or you're going to hate them. The Witch, It Comes at Night, and Hereditary all share, I think, quite a bit of DNA, and that is that they are really, really well made. They're all a bit of a slow burn, old-fashioned, suspense-y movies.
Built on acting.
Yes. And that's not for everyone. And I think the marketing and some of the immediate social media reactions saying that it's the scariest movie of all time probably did the movie more harm than good. When people hear scariest movie ever, I think there are certain expectations that come to mind. But Astor was not trying to make that kind of a movie. He blended some really wonderful elements of some of my favorite horror movies of all time, but specifically the late 60s and early 70s. And to not give anything away, I won't tell you what those movies are, because as soon as I do, you're going to be like, oh, shit, well, this is going to happen. But in a year of great horror movies, this one appealed to me the most. It is atmospheric as A Quiet Place is. Hereditary just drips with this dread that you get from the second you get in, and it stays with you after you leave. There are real dick punch moments in this movie that you're not expecting. Literally, just knock your block right off. But holy shit, I don't want to be that guy that oversells it and says it's the scariest movie of all time. But I remember, this isn't giving much away, when I was growing up and really getting into horror movies, I wanted to go back and see some that I hadn't seen. And The Exorcist was one that, this is the scariest movie of all time. I was like, all right, it's good enough for me. But even as a child of the 80s, growing up with Freddy and Jason, The Exorcist was a different kind of scary. I understand why people are terrified by it, and I would understand being terrified of Hereditary, but it's a different kind of scary.
Yeah, this was one that easily could have been in my top five. I think it'll be there at the end of the year, but I figured you would put it on there. Again, I'm just trying to talk about as many. I feel like there's been so many movies I've loved this year that I want to talk about as many as possible.
But you have to talk about The Kissing Booth because you haven't done it yet.
That is my number one. Yeah. I've alluded to it, but I haven't mentioned it by name. Hereditary is so good, and it's one of those that I feel like will come back later in the year. I saw it in June, early June, so we have more than half the year left, but I can't imagine there being five better female performances by the end of the year than Toni Collette in this movie. Mm-hmm. Toni Collette is a damn powerhouse in this movie. She is ridiculous. She is so good in this movie that if she doesn't get a nom, it's going to be a damn shame, because it felt so personal. She felt so vulnerable, and it was so good. And she was so good.
It reminds me very much of The Babadook.
Very much so.
Fantastic female performance. Yes. That should have been nominated for stuff, and it wasn't.
And beautifully directed. There are so many shots in this movie that are beautiful. Like, there are some cinematography stuff that he does. There are some camera moves and just camera shots that I feel...
The first sequence of the movie.
Yeah.
I was like, holy shit.
It's a beautiful movie. Like, it's a beautifully shot movie. And I will see anything this guy does from here on out. And it's wonderfully acted. Gabriel Byrne, I feel, is a little wasted in this because he's such a good actor, but he didn't have anything to do. But the rest of the cast did. Mm-hmm. So you don't really... Because, I mean, when Ann Dowd shows up, Ann Dowd's going to be Ann Dowd. And the rest of the cast was so good that it makes up for Gabriel Byrne kind of being wasted, because he just didn't have anything to do.
It wasn't his movie. You know what I mean?
It wasn't.
This is Toni Collette. Like, The Babadook is Essie Davis. You're stuck with these women that are just phenomenal.
I could go on and on. I almost want to do a Hereditary episode at some point this year, just because... It was good. I could.
We do a lot of horror movies in October.
Yeah, I could go on.
I'd watch
it
again.
Yeah, I don't know that I would. I could do it from memory though.
Well, I'll watch the shit out of
that. I don't know that I could watch it again. My number two. This is a point I want to make before I move on from Hereditary. A24. If you are a horror fan, you have to love and respect what they're doing, because movies like The Witch, It Comes at Night, Hereditary, whether you love them or hate them.
You don't get to see those in theaters.
You don't get to see those in theaters until A24 came around. So these kind of movies were your lower end, like you have to seek them out movies. And now that those movies are coming out in theaters, you're getting, now your lower end movies are like stuff like Piwacket and Wildling that came out this year, both quality horror movies, but you know, you had to seek those out. And I mean, so now instead of just seeking out like Hereditary, now I got Hereditary and these other ones. So it's like, it's almost like
it makes it easier for you.
Yeah. So as a studio makes its mark and like, okay, these are small budget indies in the studio system, and the studio system isn't altering them because they're all slow burns. They're all built on acting. So A24 is kind of rebirthing horror in the mainstream in theaters, and they can't be thanked enough for it because it is opening it up for other smaller movies to kind of fill that hole that were the A24 type movies before. But my number two, it's a studio movie. It's a big time studio movie. I may be the only person that loves this franchise as much as I love it, but I can't help it. Hereditary, I wouldn't say was a fun time. It's a very, very amazing movie. Very well done. My number two is one of the most fun times I had at the movie theater this year. It is written and directed by Stephen S. DeKnight, starring John Boyega, Scott Eastwood, Kaylee Spaney, Charlie Day. It's Pacific Rim Uprising. I will not shy away from the fact that I love Pacific Rim. I adore that movie.
Giant robots, giant monsters, what's not to
exactly.
like?
Exactly. And what Pacific Rim 2 does...
Apocalypse is canceled.
...takes you back into that world without having to set up as much because you know the world.
You get it, yeah.
With a better cast... with better characters. John Boyega, Pentecost's son. He's Idris Elba's son from the first movie. I mean, Boyega is a much better actor than Charlie Hunnam, and this character is way better than Riley, whatever. But then Kaylee Spaney is Amara. She's like a little Haley Steinfeld. Like, she steals the show. Like, she's really, really good. And there's a lot I love about this movie. And it's not just like, oh, it's robots and monsters. There's a lot I love. I like the relationship between Eastwood and Boyega because so often in these like military type movies, when you have your rivals, they're just, it's cut and dry. Like, they hate each other. The relationship between these two are cool. Boyega went his own way and Eastwood stuck around. So there's that animosity there, but they were partners at one point. So like, there's still that respect there. I thought that was played out really well. The whole recruit thing where it's basically building a team to build a franchise off of. And you know what? It's way more character-driven. The monster fighting robots isn't as big until the end, but then by the time it comes, you get your money's worth for it. Like, you get your robots
like
fighting.
The Power Rangers.
Yeah, but I mean, there was a robot fighting robot scene earlier that kind of gets everything moving, and it's a lot of fun, and it sets up a third one that I really hope we get to see. Even if I have to fund it myself, I'll figure out a way.
We're going to be using, like, Transformers.
It's like a post-credit scene to where they set up the third one, and it's, I want to see that. I love it. It's one of those I watch, and my smile is just ear to ear the whole time, and it ends, and it's like, that's what I love about going to movies, is that feeling. Is it the best movie I'll see this year? No. Is it the best made movie, best act? No. Did I have a ton of fun watching it, and did it make me feel feels inside? Absolutely.
I'm glad you said best made, best acted. I'm not saying that my number one is the best written, acted, or pieced together movie I've seen this year. It is not. But it is the movie that I had the most fun watching, and it is Infinity War, directed by the Russo brothers, starring the Avengers and half of Hollywood, essentially. I find that looking at the MCU nowadays is a lot like watching some really steady-handed people play Jenga. The further along the game goes, the harder it gets, and the surer it looks like the whole tower is going to come crashing down based on all the shit that they just keep putting on top of it. That's not to say that I ever had to worry about Infinity War not making any money, but I was concerned with how the Russos would manage to involve the sheer number of characters from 10 years of movies into a coherent story. After watching Infinity War, I still don't know how they did it, but they did. I think we might look back at this movie as sort of the apex of the MCU. I think it's safe to say that we're going to lose some characters moving forward, And simply having to feature all of these standalone characters and team-up heroes in action sequences, we could have had a three-hour, basically, superhero fight, and that was it. Oh, shit, I gotta use Falcon. I gotta use Winter Soldier. I gotta use Groot. They did all that and still told a story. Like I said, it's not the best pieced together movie, but just the fact that it did get pieced together and it wasn't a hot mess, I think is a great credit to not only the Russo brothers, but everybody that's involved in Marvel. I mean, I really don't want to be the guy that shits on DC right now. It's whatever.
Nobody needs to.
No, they're struggling to get four of their A-list characters into a movie together and have it be good. Marvel is pulling in not only
heroes.
Here's
a raccoon in a tree.
Yeah, heroes. They're giving you like, oh, here's this hero's buddy. He's in the movie for a little bit too. The sheer amount of plates that they can keep spinning and make it watchable is absolutely phenomenal. And it's the most fun I had in the theater in 2018. It's the movie I had probably the highest expectations for going in. And they pulled it off.
I mean, it was an event. Like, yes. It was the anticipation going to see this movie at 10:30 on the Friday it opened in the morning is unmatched. Episode 7 was close, or probably, I wouldn't say it's episode 7 level. It's pretty close.
Yeah, right.
But, like, as far as anticipation of, like, this is what I want to see this, it was, and it delivered.
Mm-hmm.
It's great. I saw it 3 times. Still good every
97
time.
97 to go.
Ending is one of the
cool post-credit scenes setting up.
My favorite post-credit scene, but the ending like takes your breath away like that first time, and it's one of those like
Fuck?
Yeah, yeah. I loved it, but again, we're going to talk about it so much.
Oh, we already We did an Infinity War episode.
Oh, yeah,
episode
we did.
Already.
I was going to say, I'm sure we'll do an Infinity
you
Wars
can
episode.
Spoil whatever you want because we talked about the damn thing for an hour.
I was going to say, oh, we'll do an Infinity War episode when the next one comes out. Already I forgot done. We already did because it was right after the NFL Players episode, but this movie will come up again at the end of the year. My number one is a movie. I feel like it might be on my 10 by the end of the year. It'll probably be lower. It will be lower than one, I'm sure, because I'll reshuffle these again. These are more, not really in order. It's just, these are movies I wanted
They're
to talk about.
They're in order.
Yeah, from 2018.
Obviously.
Written and directed by the criminally underrated Lee Winnell, starring fake Tom Hardy. It is Upgrade. I loved this movie. This movie was so fun to me. Fake Tom Hardy is so good in this. It's him and a voice for most of the movie. It's him and the voice of Simon Madden playing Stem. And the action scenes, Tom Hardy's basically playing two characters. He's got his body that's fighting and his face that's reacting. And it never gets old to watch. It's like you're watching two different things each time.
He's pulling at opposite ends, you know what I mean? Like, it's not, it literally he is fighting against his body, and that it plays out on his face.
But like, even the first one where he's like, stay down, dude, and when he's hitting him with plates, he's like just his facial reactions, like, what am I doing? And just
Stem, he's got a knife. Now we have a knife.
Yeah, and like the bathroom seat where he's talking trash to everybody, is like Stem is beating everybody up. It's so fun, and it doesn't get old because he brings so much. We did a episode on The Invitation and how much he did with his face and non-vocally in that movie. And a lot of that carries over into this because he does a lot with his face and his body and just how he walks. And you know what? He's entertaining enough to make the movie entertaining. The action, I think, is great. The story, it's decent. It's a decent noir-ish kind of mystery. You see one twist coming, like it's kind of telegraphed, but I think the main twist, I didn't see it coming. I thought that was kind of cool. The ending is cool. Like, it's different. It's not what I expect. It's not really the kind of ending I expect going into this kind of movie, but I really, really liked it. And Lee Whannell, I really like his writing. Like, he's a really good writer, and I really liked how this was directed. It's one of those world-building movies where you're set into this. Okay, tech is taking over everything. And your characters with the guns implanted in their arms. Like, I thought it was really cool. And it was just a
nanite
blast.
Sneeze.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. Like, it was just such a blast. And
Black Mirror, we've seen a lot of these technology stories, and I'll mention Black Mirror again next week, but I think we are kind of more used to like how these stories are going to end. But I like that we're getting this kind of sci-fi. I mean, on the one hand, it's hardcore Henry. First person. You
know, there's a Dan Stevens movie that was very similar a year or so ago, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, it's GoPro right in front of Logan Marshall Green's face. But Logan Marshall Green, I believe, is his birth name. But it was a good movie. I liked it a lot. It was one of those ones that was in my second tier. And my second tier is movies that I did like. I mean, Black Panther's in there. I had The Post. It came out the very beginning of this year.
I couldn't remember if that was late 17
or
early.
It was, I think, maybe in limited release late 17, but it was an awards show movie. So it was early this year. Ready Player One, I liked a lot for what it was. I may be the only guy other than like 17-year-old kids, but I thought that was a fun movie. Upgrade, and then unabashedly, there was nothing wrong with Solo. Nothing at all.
I really liked Solo.
Yes.
I didn't need it, but I liked it. It was in one of my also-rans. Like, it might be in the top 10 by the end of the year. It was fun.
Yes.
It was a fun movie-going experience. I liked it. I liked the characters. I liked the performances. Nothing wrong with it at all.
No.
Not needed. But I liked it.
No, but if they're going to make these anthology movies...
I want more. It was enough for me to want more, especially continue this story.
I'd like to see a Lando,
I would like to see a Lando, and I want to see this trilogy that was planned
right,
out.
You got the way they set it up.
Yeah, you can't give that kind of tease and then not go into, hey, here's this really cool thing that we're building up. Nope, not going to do
it. By the way,
Han
Solo is Rey's dad.
Yeah.
That's the tease. I'm
trying to think what isn't... Most of my also-rans have been mentioned. I mentioned Ibiza, Solo, Super Troopers 2 didn't get mentioned. That I thought it was really good. I may be alone. I thought Hotel Artemis, for what it was a lot of fun. Was it perfect? No. Was there a lot that could be better? Yeah. Was it entertaining 90 minutes? Hell yeah, it was. I watch Sofia Boutella in anything. Like, I want to watch her fight all the time, and... You know, you get some really good Sofia Boutella fights in this, and Dave Bautista's really, really good in it. Sterling K. Brown, he's kind of the lead. It's good. Goldblum, it's not John Wick, and I think that's kind of what it was marketed as. It's not that kind of action movie. It's a different, it's kind of a slow burn, high octane action movie, if that makes any sense. Like, it's the action is big time action, but it's few and far between. But give me Sofia Boutella fighting people if she's in a dress, that's a bonus, because she's awesome. I will watch her in anything. She's one of my favorites. Like, just her filmography so far since she burst on the scene is just great.
It's fun.
She's just amazing. But that's our halftime show for this year. I mean, I had a lot that didn't get mentioned.
Yeah.
Like, I've seen a lot of movies this year, more than I have probably at this point, because Netflix is putting out so many. And MoviePass. I've seen crap like Blockers and Hurricane Heist in the theater. next week we'll be back to a normal stupid list. Next week, it's a long-ass title, but it's Joaquin Phoenix in a wheelchair. Don't worry, he won't get far on foot or something. Him and Jonah Hill. So we're going to do our favorite Joaquin Phoenix movies, which I think will be fun. So that is it for halftime. We'll see you on the second side of 2018 next week. Until then,
keep it up.